I want to describe the events they are described in the Gospel as the most earth-shattering events ever to have taken place. I want to say that everything hinges on the fact that Jesus died and that he rose again. Now, before going any further this morning, I want to make absolutely clear what we as Christians believe. That these are not ideas we're talking about, but events. Things that happened. There are some religions, of course, which are based on ideas, based on certain philosophies, if you will. And you can engage with those ideas and agree or otherwise if they make sense to you. But the Christian faith is not based on ideas, but on events, on that which happened. I want to say that right up front as we now consider that business of the Sunday morning. Very early on the first day, very early on the Sunday morning, in other words, just after sunrise. When do you think the sun rises at the moment? I was saying to some people earlier, we were down in Glasgow last night for great friends of ours were celebrating their silver wedding, and Craig was my best man. We've been friends since university, and we're like that, so it was great to go down and share in his and Jennifer's silver wedding celebrations. The downside was that we got home last night about 3 o'clock, and you know, I can remember the day when that was no problem, but you see, as you go on in years and you get to bed, you get home at 3 and you're up at 6, as I am every morning, then it catches up. But this I noticed, driving from Dundee to Arbroath, we saw the sunrise. 2:30 in the morning, the sun was coming up. Now, the word that is used in the Greek to describe, to mean very early in the morning, is a word that refers to the fourth quarter of the night, the fourth watch, if you like. Therefore, between 3 o'clock and 6 o'clock in the morning. That was when these women got up, took the spices that they had bought with the purpose of anointing Jesus' body. They were up early, just at that moment when the sun begins to appear. And they were going there to the tomb. This was for them the first opportunity, because with Jesus having been crucified on the Friday and then the Sabbath taking place Friday evening and into Saturday, they couldn't do it then. It was against the law. So the Sunday morning, the first day of the week now, as we Christians have it, was the first opportunity they had to go to the tomb and do what they felt was their duty, to anoint the body of Jesus. But it wasn't just to anoint his body. There was a tradition among the folks then that the spirit of the deceased would kind of hover around in the vicinity of the tomb for 3 days after death. And I'm sure that these women wanted to go to the tomb and somehow try to connect with Jesus' spirit before the spirit would flee, as was their tradition and understanding. For 3 days the spirit would hang in there and then be gone. This was their last chance to go and be where Jesus was. It was early in the morning. Who went? Who was there? Who was in that advanced party? Who were the ones who were most committed and most dedicated, and I think whose love for Jesus was most apparent and overflowing? The answer, it was the woman. The woman. The woman who had been at the cross and had remained there at the cross through all of Jesus' agony. The woman who had faithfully followed him all the way, while so many of the men abandoned ship. And where were the men now, apart from behind closed doors, for fear? And so it was the women. Most churches are made up predominantly of women. The statistic is that in the average church there are 3 women to every 1 man. I'm not sure why, but I do know this. Here at St. Andrew's, we are working hard to build up men's ministry, to build up the sense that men as Christians is vitally important in 21st century Britain. I wonder if we have come through generations where it was thought of as kind of women's work. Men were sort of hardy folks and not given to what might have been considered sort of sentimentality and so on. Nothing could be further from the truth. We are working to the day when there will be as many men in church as there will be women. And when men are as fired up in their faith as ever a woman was. But with all of that said, based on all of my years in ministry, there is something special about the faith of a woman. There is, I sense, a degree of devotion in a woman which is not ordinarily found in men. And so it was the woman who there on that Sunday morning went to be where their Lord was. And I call on you, women, in our church even today, to continue to be as devoted, to continue to love and adore the Lord Jesus as those first women did. As I've made clear, this is for men too, but there is a special faith of a woman. And I look for it among you, women of St. Andrew's. In this passage from the Gospel, in this version that we have, 3 women are mentioned. But I want to say in particular about Mary Magdalene. I read in my preparations this week, and I wonder if it might be said to be true. No one loved Jesus as much as Mary Magdalene loved Jesus. No one loved Jesus as Mary Magdalene did. And the justification for saying that is that she had been, as she sensed it, forgiven by him, accepted by him, purified by him, and loved by him as no one else had. You see, Mary Magdalene in those days would have been considered a sinner of sinners. Mary Magdalene would have been one to whom the religious establishment would have pointed a finger. A pointed finger of condemnation. According to the religious order of the day, she had no part in God's covenant. by the sinfulness of her life. And yet Jesus had reached out to her as no one ever had. Religion points the finger. Christian love extends the hand and the embrace. When someone has been so shamed, when someone has been so very aware of their own sinfulness, to be accepted and loved makes all the difference in the world. I came across a beautiful poem also this week, written in the 19th century by a man, Henry Kingsley. Henry Kingsley, and it speaks of Mary Magdalene. We often talk of the angel standing at the pearly gates. Here's a poem which takes us there. Magdalene, at Michael's gate, tirled at the pin. On Joseph's thorn sang the blackbird. Let her in. Let her in. Hast thou seen the wounds? Said Michael. Knowest thou thy sin? It is evening. Evening, said the blackbird. Let her in. Let her in. Yes, I have seen the wounds, and I know my sin. She knows it well, 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 sang the blackbird. Let her in, let her in. Thou bringest no offerings, said Michael. Not save sin. And the blackbird sang, she is sorry, sorry, sorry. Let her in, let her in. When he had sung himself to sleep, a night did begin. One came and opened Michael's gate, and Magdalene went in. I'm almost in tears to read that. That Jesus is the one who came to Michael's gate and Magdalene went in. Jesus is the only one who stands at that gate and lets us in. And that gate opens up not to the perfect, not to the self-righteous, not to the overly religious, but to those who know their need of Christ. To those who know how far short they fall. To those who are aware of their sinfulness. To those who are aware of the mistakes that they have made in life. And the Magdalene said, I am sorry, I am sorry. Let her in, let her in. I had chance on Friday afternoon to speak to two folks that we've been working with through our Havilah ministry and who have been coming around here to the church. Two folks who have made so many more mistakes than they can even count. to folks whose lives have been far from conventional, far from respectable, to folks who have been written off by society, to folks who would stand condemned by respectable society. To folks only too well aware of their sinfulness. And yet, as I spoke to them, I heard only their humility and their sense of needing God, just like the Magdalene before them. And so as Mary and those other women went to the empty tomb that morning, what did they find? Well, I just gave you the answer. The empty tomb. These words, empty tomb. Folks, tombs aren't empty. Graves aren't empty. Graves are inhabited by the dead. But this tomb was empty. And as those women first discovered it, all kinds of scenarios must have played out in their mind. Perhaps grave robbers had been at work, and that would not have been unusual. Again, we learn that grave robbers were at work in these days. It could have happened. Maybe that was in their mind. Or had the authorities, the Jews in cahoots with the Romans, had they arranged to remove the body, kind of preempting the possibility of Jesus' followers saying he's alive? And if they had said that, then the authorities would have produced the body and said, no, he's not, here he is, dead. Those were some of the possibilities that must have been in mind as the woman discovered the tomb to be empty. But instead, they were met by a messenger, an angel of God, and he spoke to them these words: he is not here. He has risen, just as he said. Folks, I have examined the evidence, the stories of the resurrection, to the nth degree. And though the notion of someone coming back to life, someone being raised from the dead, makes absolutely no logical sense whatsoever, I can tell you, I believe it 100% that Jesus rose from the grave. But here's the thing. I certainly can't prove it to you. There are times when we need to take Jesus at his word. And this, I think, is what the angelic visitor was getting at, saying to those women, he is not here, he has risen, just as he said. Saying to the women, you can trust him. He never lied. Everything Jesus said, you could take to be true and reliable. Even this. Before his death, he had told them of it, that he would die, that he would suffer, but that on the third day he would rise again. The angel is reminding them, saying to them, remember, he said it. Now, I repeat, anyone want to talk about the resurrection, come and see me afterwards today. I'll make an hour with you this week. And I will lay out to you all the evidence. I will persuade you of the truth of the resurrection to the very best of my ability. But I won't be able to prove it to you. Jesus said it. There are times in life to take him at his word. And that was the first thing the angel said to them. He is risen. Believe it. The second thing he said to them was this: go quickly and tell his disciples, tell others, in other words. You know, there are some things that are too good to keep to yourself. Douglas Irvin, our baby of the moment, who we had here at the front of the church this morning. He was born at about half past ten on a Friday night. But by the time Stuart, I guess, had got used to the fact that he was a father, and by the time the Lynn and Douglas had been transported from Arbroath down to Nine Wells, by the time all those things had happened, it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. It was then that Stuart decided that he had to tell other people, including me. I could have waited till the morning. I could have waited. But he had just seen his first child being born, and he couldn't wait. So he was on the phone and texting, letting the world know, I'm a dad. Douglas has been born. Some things you cannot keep to yourself. And those women, having discovered the risen Christ, what did they do but tell others? Oh, how we need a church today full of people who are so filled up with the risen Christ themselves that they can do nothing other than live it out and speak it out into the world. And the final thing is this. So the women did go from that tomb on their mission to tell others. I love the sense of mixed emotions. Afraid, of course. This was unheard of, what they had just seen and witnessed. Afraid, pensive perhaps, but also filled with joy that Jesus was and is alive. Of all the gifts that the Christian might have, joy is ours in abundance. And much later, we, I guess, come to realize it, but Jesus had told them ahead of time again, telling them that it was going to happen, he was going to die, but then when you discover the truth that I am alive and always will be, your hearts will rejoice. Your hearts will be filled with joy, and no one or no thing will ever be able to rob you of your joy. We all go through all kinds of stuff in life, huge ups and downs along the way. Some of you know times of great pain and suffering, but the risen Christ grants to us a joy that is ours for keeps, and which no one can take from you. In some moment's time, we will finish our service today by singing, Thine be the glory, risen, conquering Son. It's not Easter day, but for the Christian, every day is Easter day. Let's bow our heads.